I ask you if you would close your eyes for just a moment, and would you listen with everything that you have to these words of Jesus that Stephen and Caleb read just a few minutes ago? Would you listen once again to these words? If anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. My Father will love him and will come to him and make our home with him. He who does not love me will not obey my teaching. These words you hear are not my own. They belong to the Father who sent me. All this I have spoken while still with you. But the Counselor, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. And do not be afraid. You may open your eyes. If you need to, you may elbow your neighbor and say, "You may open your eyes." This week I came across a story of a fellow by the name of Neil Martin, who was a member of the British Parliament. And one day Neil Martin was leading a group of people on a little tour through the House of Parliament. And it so happened that a man, a friend of his by the name of Lord Halisham, was in the lobby there of the Parliament. Now, Lord Halisham was a very important man, a big wig, and it just so happened this particular day, Lord Halisham was wearing the full regalia of his position. From head to toe, he was just decked out in his uniform and his medals and completely covered with all of the insignia of his importance. Lord Halisham, seeing his friend Neil Martin and all these people across the way, he decided to shout a greeting. So he yelled, "Neil!" And all the people with him bowed down before him. Well, this morning, I would like to speak about obedience. And I'd like to speak about the call of Christians to obedience to God and to obedience to Jesus Christ. And as I begin, I would like to acknowledge that this is an important, extraordinarily important, and difficult subject. It's important. We can't even begin to be serious about Christian life without taking obedience seriously. It's just not possible. It is so important in the Scriptures. It is so important in the life of God's people. We simply can't take the gospel of Jesus seriously without putting effort and energy into understanding and practicing obedience. But at the same time, I'm going to ask you this morning to be very sensitive to what a difficult topic this is, particularly for some people. It may be that there are some among us this morning who, the moment you hear the words of instruction or direction, you immediately feel a pull going the opposite direction. I wonder if anybody can relate to the humorist who said, "Every once in a while, when I'm told what I should do, I do exactly what people ask just to confuse them." I wonder if any of you can relate to that. But I hope this morning that you will appreciate that this is a very, very sensitive topic for some people. I want you to imagine a person who has experienced abuse in their home. And in fact, we have many in a congregation our size. And I want you to imagine how difficult this topic is when obedience has been forced through physical coercion. I want you to just be sensitive to these people for a moment. I'd like you to hear the challenge that my teacher put to us many years ago. My teacher, James Earl Massey, is an African-American man, a brilliant preacher. Dr. Massey told us one time that his grandmother would invite them to read the Bible in her home whenever they came to visit, except, he said, she would not allow them to read from the letters of Paul, because the letters of Paul included the phrase that slaves should be obedient to their masters. James Earl Massey's grandmother had grown up in a slave home, and she would not allow those words to be read out loud. You can understand, can't you? This is a difficult and a challenging subject, but it is extraordinarily important. And this morning, I'm going to try to speak briefly about an incredibly important topic. By the way, if don't look at your bulletin right now. I want you to ignore the title that is written in your bulletin. Once again this week, I had the experience of something that I've said many times recently. I've been saying that deadlines make for idiots. And every Thursday at noon, Beverly needs a title for a sermon. And by the time I gave it to her on Thursday, from the time I was finished preparation on Friday, I realized I needed to go a different direction. I would title this sermon this morning, if I had the opportunity to do it again, I would title it, Perfect Obedience, Perfect Freedom. Try to imagine what the disciples of Jesus were thinking and feeling. They are with Jesus on the last dinner together. They're gathered together with Jesus. It is an intimate moment. It is just and 11 of his disciples. Judas Iscariot has already left because he has gone his way to go and betray Jesus. And in the Gospel of John, chapters 14 and 15 and beyond are some of the most intimate words you will ever hear between Jesus and his disciples. The crowds are no longer present. And Jesus has already told his disciples that the time is coming very, very soon when he will be leaving them. And where he's going, they cannot go. And there is this this spirit of foreboding that comes across the disciples. We know this because again and again and again through these sections, Jesus says things like, don't be afraid, don't worry. He speaks words of comfort to disciples who are very much like children whose parents are getting ready to go away and the children are wanting to know, who's going to take care of us? Where are you going to go? When are you going to be coming back? What's going to take place with us in the meantime? And it is in this extraordinarily important and intimate moment that Jesus says, if a person loves me, they will obey my word. And my Father will come to them, and we will make our home in them. And if a person does not love me, they will not obey my words. These are the words of Jesus, intimate words spoken in an extraordinary moment of gathering with his disciples. I want you to know that these words of Jesus spoken to disciples are spoken to people who have an uncomfortable arrangement with the word obedience, just as many of us do. Remember, these are people who had grown up in the towns and villages of Galilee, and all over the towns and villages of Galilee, there were signs posted all over the place, perhaps not literal signs, but figurative signs posted all over the place that reminded them that Caesar is Lord. There were soldiers that manned the various places around their villages. There were constant reminders that if they stepped out of line with what the Roman Empire demanded of them, that they would be in serious trouble. Sure, the empire gave some structure to their lives, but it was also like gravity. It held everybody back and down and in. And well, this was the world in which the disciples of Jesus were living. And it was also a world in which the word obedience had been tainted with challenges, even in the synagogues. Remember, again and again and again, Jesus had to address people who had become overwhelmed and burdened by the call to religious obedience. Remember that on some occasions he spoke to the leaders of his day and he said, you stockpile people with rules and regulations and obligations that you yourselves can't even keep. And remember that Jesus, to his own disciples and to the crowds on one occasion, Jesus had said, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden. Oh, they were all over, people who were overwhelmed with the burdens and the demands of religious legalism. So these are disciples who have strange relationships to obedience, ambiguous relationships with obedience, even as many of us do this morning. And that's why it makes all the difference in the world that the speaker of these words is Jesus. This is the one who has been with them now. The one whose love and grace they have encountered again and again and again and again. It is Jesus who is speaking to them on this occasion. And it is Jesus who is speaking to their deepest needs. To these disciples who are longing for freedom. To these disciples who are longing for righteousness. To these disciples who are longing for peace and who are longing for joy, Jesus is calling them to gather up all of their deepest longings and to connect them in obedience with his word. It is as though Jesus is saying, if you want to experience real love and real joy and real freedom, make sure that these things are attached to me and to my word. So, this is the setting in which Jesus is addressing his disciples, speaking to their deepest needs and to ours. This word of Jesus is addressed to you and I today in the places of our most powerful and profound wantings. One of the things I would love for you to do this week is I'd love for you to create some space to listen to your heart, to just listen, to listen to your deepest longings. If you listen to that place where you get to your heart saying to you, I hope we get out of church early today so that we can beat the Presbyterians to Mancino, I'm hoping you'll listen a little bit deeper. If you get to that place where you're saying to yourself, I hope that they're still holding those great cells at JCPenney's, I hope you'll listen a bit deeper. I hope you'll listen until you hear your heart saying how deeply and powerfully it longs for peace, and how deeply and powerfully your heart longs for joy, and how deeply and powerfully your heart longs for love, because it is to this place that Jesus is speaking when he says, if you love me, you will obey my commands. Jesus is awakening the intentions of us, his disciples. He's calling forth our intentions to obedience. By the way, if you've been to a wedding recently, you've noticed that during a wedding, they have this portion of the wedding that is called intention to wed. And it's when the pastor says to the couple, will you, Joe, have Sally to be your wedded wife, to live together in the holy estate of marriage, etc., etc., etc.? When he gets all the way to the end, Joe says, I will. This is called an intention to wed. And in this text, Jesus is calling forth our intention to obedience. And it is a whole-bodied obedience that Jesus is calling forth. It is the sort of obedience that we see in Joshua, when Joshua stands before the children of Israel, and Joshua says, choose this day who you will serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. It is the sort of whole-bodied obedience that Jesus is calling for, that the Apostle Paul gives in Romans chapter 12 when he says, present your whole body to God, acceptable and obedient and perfect. It is whole-bodied obedience that Jesus is calling forth from the innermost place of our innermost needs, tethered in obedience to Jesus. And friends, I hope you are listening and watching when a group of teenagers stood up this morning and did that before us. I hope you are aware that they are our leaders today. I hope you are observing and listening to what they have done. These students have stood and they have said, a culture of extraordinary promiscuity, in a culture that says to us all the time, if it feels good, do it, in a culture in which almost every movie and every commercial says, if you like them, hop into the sack on the first date, these students have stood up and said, I am intending this day to be faithful to the word of Jesus so that my purity will involve all areas of my life, including my sexuality. Isn't this extraordinary? See, it is whole-bodied obedience that Jesus is calling forth on this occasion. It is our whole bodies belonging to God, and it is our intentions to give everything that we have and are in obedience to his word. Well, I would have loved to have known what was going on in those disciples' minds and hearts as Jesus was speaking to them. Keep in mind, these were real human beings in every way, just like us, to whom Jesus was speaking on this particular occasion. And Lord knows they stumbled and fell from time to time. But you know, the truth is, this incredibly ragtag group of folks that were gathered with Jesus on this particular evening experienced extraordinary freedom and spaciousness in their lives. Have you ever stopped to think about this? There is no way on the planet that this ragtag group of people gathered with Jesus on this particular evening should have changed the world. There is simply no way. They are uneducated. By and large, they are poor. They have no regalia about them. And yet, as we look at their story and as we follow them in the pages of Scripture and we follow the years after this, all that took place, the only explanation that we can say to what happened to this early Christian movement is something extraordinarily powerful happened among these people. It couldn't have happened without the resurrection of Jesus. It could not have happened apart from the death and the resurrection of Jesus. And then following the resurrection of Jesus, they remembered these words that he had spoken to them on the night before his crucifixion. Wow! We need to tether our obedience to Jesus, the risen Lord. You see, it wasn't their brother that was calling them to be obedient. It wasn't their principal that was calling them to be obedient. It wasn't, surely wasn't, Caesar that was calling them to be obedient. It was the one who had given himself for their sake. It was the one who had poured himself out on behalf of them. It is the one who had spread his blood in love for them. It was the one who had been raised from the dead in power for them. It was the word of Jesus that said to them, "If you love me, you will follow my word." I wonder, I've always wondered if there was a moment of befuddlement for the disciples as Jesus was speaking. It feels like things are backwards here. He says, "If anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. And my Father will love him and will come to..." Wait a minute. Don't you wonder if the disciples sat back for a moment and scratched their heads and ran their fingers through their beards? Wait a minute. If you obey me, if you love me, you will obey me and my Father will love... Wait a minute. Doesn't the love of the Father come first? And don't you wonder if the disciples for just a moment said, "Well, this is so different than everything we've experienced in Jesus." Again and again and again, he's spoken of the love of God and the grace of God first in our lives as response. And now he's saying, "If you love me, you will obey me, and then my Father will love you." And if they relax for just a moment, they'll discover that in just a few paragraphs, Jesus is going to switch the order around again, and he's going to say, "Abide in my love. If you abide in my love, then you will bear much fruit, the fruit of obedience." And you begin to get a picture of a circle that is unending, a little circle of obedience that is unending. And to be honest, it doesn't matter where you start. We'll start here. The circle of obedience begins with the deepest longings of these disciples, their longings for joy and their longings for peace and their longings for love. And Jesus teaches them to tether their deepest longings in obedience to him. "Obey my word," says Jesus. And so now we have these disciples tethered, their deepest longings, their deepest intentions now are gathered up with Jesus. And now we have Jesus saying, "As you're obedient, you will discover the love of the Father and my love dwelling within you. As you are rooted and grounded in love, then you will be empowered for the obedience that you intend to do. And as you're empowered for the obedience that you intend to do, your longing for that will only grow and increase. More and more you will long for love and joy and peace and patience and kindness." Do you see? It is a cycle of obedience that goes on and on and on and on. And this is the picture of growth, ongoing growth, that Jesus paints for his disciples in John chapter 14 and chapter 15, a growth in obedience that will never end. Well, I'd like to tell you a dorky story, may I? As many of you know, I am a runner. And this is my hobby. It is one of my hobbies. I really enjoy running. And last year, 2012, I had set a goal for myself that I wanted to run a 5K in less than 20 minutes. So I trained all winter long, and I trained all spring long, and I had some troubles with injuries and this and that. And then the day of the Highland Festival came, and I was all ready to go. And so I ran in the Highland Festival 5K, and I was completing the course, running up the hill toward the college where this 5K was coming to an end, and I saw the finish line. And I looked at my watch, and I said to myself, "I've got it." And as I got closer to the finish line, I realized that it wasn't the finish line. It was the starting line. And the finish line was maybe 20 or 30 yards further down. And so I picked it up as best I was able, and I hit the finish line, and I hit my stopwatch on my watch, and it said 20 minutes and 1 second. True story. So, this year I decided I was going to give it a go again, and I ran through the winter, and I ran through the spring, and yesterday morning was this child advocacy 5K race, and so I was running along at 1 mile. I looked at my watch, and I went, "Oh, I'm a little bit fast. I better slow down." And at 2 miles, I looked at my watch, and I went, "Wow, I got the same pace going on." And I told myself just to try to keep that pace going. And finally, I got to the finish line, and I hit the button, and I looked down, and I'd broken 20 minutes, and I was so happy. And so I just share my joy with you this morning. Now, here's why I tell this dorky little story. There are people who will see me running in the middle of the winter, and they'll say, "That guy needs brain surgery." What kind of a dingbat would go out running and submitting his body to all that silliness in winter and summer and spring and fall? But see, what those folks don't understand is that for me, that is freedom. It is the freedom to be able to use my body for things it was created to do, and it is the freedom to be in shape so that I can do the things that I want to do, and it is the freedom that allows me to do the things that I really want to do instead of the things that I just shallowly want to do. And there are people who are going to look at the teens who have made the True Love Weight Pledge this way day, and they're going to say, what a bunch of dingbats. But what they don't understand is that these kids are really free. They're free to bind their obedience to the word of Jesus, to give him their fullest intention. And they're going to be folks that look at all of us here in this sanctuary this morning, people making extraordinary sacrifices because you belong to Jesus. They're going to be people who look at the way you love the poor and the least of these. They're going to be people that look at you making your very best intentions to not return evil with evil, as Scripture says, but to return evil with good. They're going to be people who watch as you forgive as you have been forgiven. They're going to be people who watch you bearing the fruit of holiness, and they're going to say, what a bunch of idiots to burden themselves down in this way. And what they don't understand is that to be tied to Jesus is to be free. Here's the way the cycle works. We are people with profound longings. This is what it is to be human. It is to long for love and joy and peace. The cycle is that we who long for joy and peace, instead of choosing 1,000 other ways, bind ourselves to drugs and alcohol if we wanted to. We could bind ourselves to sexual practices as we wanted to. We could bind ourselves to 100,000 things. But we are people who have expressed our intention to be obedient to Jesus. Having expressed our intention to be obedient to Jesus, we then dwell in the love of God that is poured out for us, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit dwelling within us. Jesus literally said, my Father and I will make our room in you. We discover that we are rooted and grounded in love, unconditional and everlasting. And rooted and grounded in love, we are to bear the fruit as we discover that we are empowered to bear the fruit of obedience and we follow it through in lifestyles of holiness, then our longing for more of God and more of joy and more of real peace continues to emerge at the bottom of our lives, at the deepest parts of who we are. This is the cycle of obedience. And this morning, I just very simply want to open our altar to you as our worship leaders come and prepare to lead us in just a moment. It might be that in recent days or weeks or months, you're discovering that you've become tethered to other things, that your obedience has been connected with other things, and God knows it's not going to make you free. Or it just might be that this morning you would like to reconfirm your intention to obedience to Jesus. Or it might be that for the very first time ever this morning, you would like to express your intention to obey the way of Jesus and the word of Jesus, which leads to life. I just want to very gently open this altar to you this morning. As our worship leaders are leading us, if you would like to come and pray, this is a way of our congregation being able to pray for you, and I absolutely guarantee if you come forward and pray, there are going to be people who are in our pews or in these chairs over here who are going to observe you, and they're just going to be praying for you this morning. If for some reason there's not enough room on the altar and you need to kneel at these steps here, you can do that as well. Friends, I just invite you to follow as you sense God leading you this morning. Let's follow in the way of Jesus. Our intentions are obedience, empowered by the love of God through the Spirit, to bear the fruit of holiness, to continue with this deep, deep longing to be God's people in the world.